Hello, I'm Owen Wainhouse and you're listening to Architecture Masters, the podcast from the London Festival of Architecture. This week's episode was recorded in Kigali as part of a series of episodes we're bringing you from East Africa, exploring identity and architecture. Identity is the theme of this year's LFA.
So yeah, my name is Theo Owayezu. I'm an architect, design associate at Mass Design Group. It was very hard to find a Rwandan architect because back then the total was about 40 to 50 architects.
Hello, I'm Owen Wainhouse and you're listening to Architecture Masters, the podcast from the London Festival of Architecture. In this week's episode, we're speaking to Theo Owayezu, architect and associate at Mass Design Group in Kigali, in Rwanda. Mass Design Group was established in Massachusetts in 2008 as a 501c3 not-for-profit organisation. In the words of the practice, architecture is never neutral. It either heals or hurts. Mass say that their mission is to research, build and advocate for architecture that promotes justice and human dignity. It's often referred to as social architecture. Mass Design Group began in 2008 as an idea for a different way of practice by a group of students at the Harvard Graduate School of Design. The practice's first project in Rwanda was to design and build the Butaro District Hospital in partnership with the Rwandan Ministry of Health and the NGO Partners in Health. The practice went on to open an office in Kigali, where it's now one of the largest firms in the country. Theo studied architecture at the University of Rwanda, the country's only architecture school, where some of Mass Design Group's partners still teach. I joined Theo in the firm's office in the Kigali Heights development, close to the Kigali Convention Centre, where I started by asking about the founding of Mass Design Group in Kigali.
Yeah, it officially started in 2008, and this is the 10th year in Rwanda, and Mass has been working in different countries in East Africa, South African countries, and we have some projects in Western Africa, and some in Haiti, and we have our very first project in America now.
From this office, is that?
So yeah, we do have two offices. One in Boston, which deals with the American Southern America projects, and the Kigali one deals with the African projects.
Okay. So you're. You're working across Africa then from this office. There are people working on projects outside of Rwanda.
Yes, we're working across Africa. And the work we do is mostly, Cosmas is a non-profit organization, and we mostly do social architecture that includes healthcare facilities and educational facilities.
Okay.
Now we're branching into housing and urban planning projects.
Okay.
And, yeah.
We were saying, just when we were talking earlier then, that you're probably the largest architecture firm in Rwanda now, Mass Design Group. You're, what, kind of 50 people here, 40 people in the practice? What sort of size is the company here?
Yeah, the Kigali office is about 40 plus people, which includes architecture, three quarters of the staff are architects, and then we have engineering department and some operations people. And I cannot think of any bigger architectural office that is based in Rwanda at the moment. I'll be right to say that we are one of the biggest.
Okay. Other firms, I guess, firms then come in and they work in Rwanda, but without an office or without being here permanently. Or
So yeah, they come on project basis and leave after that. They're not established in the country.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So we're, just for people listening then, we're recording this kind of 5:30, 6 o'clock in the evening. There's still, I'm interested, there's still people at their desks working away. Is there a long hours culture in Rwanda? Do architects put long hours in their work?
So, yeah, I think generally speaking, it's architecture and long hours, night. And it happens according to projects and pushing deadlines. Okay. Yeah, it happens. But
okay, it's the same the world over,
it's
I think.
It's the same everywhere.
And then I was interested, we were talking earlier again about you studying architecture and your route to becoming an architect. Do you want to just tell me that story again? That was really interesting.
I just started architecture in 2010 from the University of Rwanda under the School of Architecture in Kigali. And back then I didn't know anything about architecture. I initially chose to study engineering, civil engineering, because that was the only field I knew of and I was interested in. Being a graduate from high school from sciences, I was best fit for engineering.
Right.
So then it happened this one day that my friend told me about architecture that was 1 year old or few months old. And
that was at the University of Rwanda?
At the University
of Rwanda.
A really
young course, a new course.
I was just starting and I didn't know anything about it, and this friend of mine was like, yeah, architecture is about drawing buildings. I could relate myself drawing buildings, so I was like, yeah, let's go for it. And then I switched to architecture and got accepted. So,
that's interesting. Yeah. You say you were a science graduate then, or a science kind of background. I guess a lot of people come into architecture, some of them with an arts background and some with a science background. It's interesting the route you came from science, but still wanting to draw. Is that, it means a lot of your work hand-drawn? Are you using kind of computer modelling, using BIM? What's your day-to-day work like now?
Now, yeah, it's a mix of hand-drawing and computer aided
design.
And yeah. It was back then. It was quite interesting. Like someone from calculus and math and physics,
calculus, maths, and physics. Yeah, and, the real hard sciences. Yeah,
but the theory around sciences in this country was that like best performers from high school in sciences can do anything, being medicine and engineering. So that was the government initiative to push students and high school students to do sciences, mostly encouraging the women to study sciences so that they can take over some medical and engineering related fields.
And then, so a new course, fairly new course at University of Rwanda that you joined. I'm interested then in the kind of background of people studying in Britain. We have, certainly the industry is very heavily dominated by men in the industry, particularly at senior levels within the profession. When you went to university, Rwanda famously has more women in parliament than men. Is that the same in architecture school?
Yeah, it's pretty much the same. The class ahead of us was having three girls in the school, and our class was having five at the beginning. We were 25, so that's
20%.
Because the architecture was a new thing, and even those five, we graduated with three. So some of them dropped out just because of it. It was too intense, and new to most of people.
Yeah.
So I won't say that only girls dropped out, but also like considering the population of girls we had, like more than 50% left, and
that's interesting.
I mean, it's a mix of like being new thing and you cannot picture after school life what will you do, and of course there were so many opportunities, but it's hard to be sure that you will be getting a job or
because you can't I guess you can't see role models in the profession if it's a very new young profession in the country. Very hard to
it was very hard to find a Rwandan architect. Because back then the total was about 40 to 50 architects in country. So
that's 40, that's not 1,000, that's 40 or 50.
40.
Total, yeah.
Yeah, 50.
50, wow.
Yeah, total in...
In the whole, in a country of what, country 12 million or something.
Yeah, 12 million people. Okay. So we rarely saw some Rwandese architects. And,
Now, I mean, with your... cohort with your class having graduated, you're up to closer to 100 architects in the country now.
What's so yeah, we now 95 to be exact. Okay. Registered this year, 2018.
Yeah, there are 95 architects in the country.
Yeah,
yeah, of which we're delighted to have one of them here with us today. That's okay. And then, so I mean, that must, I guess, the kind of big concentration then of those architects is in Kigali, where most people practice. We were talking earlier then about where people went on to get jobs afterwards, and you were saying different. I mean, did you have a vision for when you changed to study architecture? Did you think what you might be doing when you graduated?
It kept changing through my academic years, and I saw myself. I started being like, I can draw buildings and work with engineers, and we make better buildings. And my ideas around architecture and professional practice kept changing. Like from third year, I think I joined a Kenyan firm, and I was working on site, and it was interesting to see how the practice is out and how I can fit in the on the market after graduation. But after that internship, I just changed my mind to like how best can I use my skills that I'm learning here.
Yeah.
So I switched from the typical architectural firm to a more social approach, social architecture. So my second internship was mostly building a house for the poor in one of the centers in Rwanda. So that's when I started being more interested in seeing my skills fitting within the context and see how I can best improve the lives of the community. So then from there, you can relate how I just joined MAS.
You can see it's a perfect fit for you.
Yeah.
At university, you were talking about internships then. I mean, how long is the architecture degree here? How long do you have to study?
So yeah, the bachelor's degree is 5 years.
Wow,
and,
okay.
You have to do professional internships.
Okay.
I'm not sure if you call them professional internships, but from third year to fourth year, you have to do total internships, 2 months long internships. In order to see what's happening up there, and you can also decide which way to do.
And that obviously helped you then to understand what you wanted to do as an architect and where you wanted to...
Yeah, I think that's the only way I decided. I could see what everyone is doing, and I could see which path I should follow according to the issues I'm seeing around in the country. So
But really hard. I mean, I'm thinking about architecture students in London and about how it's fairly easy for them when they go to university to think, to see, I mean, there are, you know, 3,000-4,000 architecture firms in London. So quite easy for them to see role models maybe and the sort of people they might want to work for, the sort of practices. Must have been kind of quite kind of a leap into the dark almost about thinking what, with such a young kind of profession in this country, were there people that you, were there architects that you, maybe internationally or in the country that you had heard of that you were kind of interested in?
Yeah, I'd say the people I had access to, I mean, to talk to, be inspired from were mostly our lecturers at the university, because they had also their offices. For example, Mass had about 2, 3, 4 people teaching at the university, and you could tell how you can fit in what they are doing
from their teaching style. From their
teaching style, sharing their learning from. Okay. From their projects, which was also interesting because they were also learning from this context. So we could relate the problems they are solving on sites with what we were studying, regardless how young you are, from first year or second year. But
And are the kind of examples that you're working with then, are they, so when you're being taught, when you're in architecture school, are you looking at case studies from Rwanda? Are you looking at case studies from overseas? I'm wondering where the kind of influence or the style or the comes from.
It's it'll be a mix of the two, because we were looking for case studies from Rwanda, as in understanding the reality and what architecture has been in the country.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say that we didn't have architecture before, because people were building and were making space and trying to find cases of successful projects abroad and see what we can, what best we can learn from them and apply them in our context. So, which I'd say that one example would be the development of informal settlements. Which
the development of
informal settlements.
Okay, informal settlements.
Which part of our urban planning, urban design course involves us to get into informal settlements to understand the real problems and strength, so that we could try pitch some solutions to the current issues.
Okay,
and which by the end was to be implemented or be included in the master plan, which was still developing at the moment, because this Kigali City master plan, the first plans or first ideas came out in 2007. So back then in 2010, they were doing physical plans of some neighborhoods. So
based on the 2007 master plan.
Before that, we didn't have any.
Any master plan at
any,
all?
Any master plan or any drone plan of the city. So,
And when you, I mean, I'm interested then just in the process of how you, I mean, the kind of planning system. Do you have to go through planners here to get things built? You know, who is the, so in London, you want to commission a big building, you know, you have to get it approved by the city council before you can, you can design. Is there a kind of a strong plan? I mean, there's the master plan, but on individual buildings, does the government have to sign off on them? Does how does that work here?
Yeah, we have the planning council at the city of Kigali that approves and checks every single development that is coming in the city. So that deals mostly with the big projects and big development, and we have also the planning council district architects who also checks individual projects, small scale projects, and see if they fit in the master plan.
Okay.
So it's the system is new, but we have it's still building. The country is still building the system so that we control at least the growth of the city and secondary cities, and it seems to work. Okay. At least compared to the way it was before.
Yeah.
So no one is no longer building without approvals.
Things are being checked.
Yeah.
And do you see that? I mean, you see that now, the buildings being built in Kigali are better than the buildings before. Do you think that's in terms of new buildings that are...
Yeah, I would say in terms of planning and... of course, you can talk much about, well... why that building has so many stuff from China, or yeah. Why? Yeah, that's the way development is. But
yeah,
at least things are following the right channels to get approved and implemented, okay. And you can track back why and how and who did that. So at least there is a level of accountability to what you're doing, and.
That accountability is really, really important. So, and indeed, we were talking then earlier about how people were often reluctant to see new buildings go up around them, and your approach at Mass about involving local communities in the building process, but also in the process. Of maybe say a few words about how you approach projects working with a local community.
So yeah, this one of the mass model we have of involving the local communities, and we believe that any new development or any new project, being a hospital, a school, it belongs to the community, and we try to involve the community at the very beginning, from the design phase, doing some workshops with them, and trying to present to them what's going to happen, instead of them thinking that they are being chased out of their land. And
yeah.
So that creates a level of ownership from the community. So from the design to implementation, we involve them to build the our projects, and trying to exhaust the craftsmanship we have on the ground, and train them to leave them with some new skills or improved skills, so that they can also be getting jobs outside their neighborhoods.
And that's in terms of construction, in terms of understanding. It's a whole range of training, is it, that you're providing? What's the...
Yeah, it's mostly in terms of construction.
Yeah.
Now we are currently investing in health and safety, because health and safety is a big challenge in these countries where we have the contractors and other people who are working in this industry are... It's still developing, so I wouldn't say that we are on a good level in terms of health and safety on site. It's a small item, but it's the biggest when you look at the impact it can have on the community or the people you are working with.
With small changes you can make can have a big impact on health and safety.
Yeah. So, yeah. And then that goes beyond just being wearing a helmet on site. Also includes, how clean drinking water is on site, so that model can also be used in their houses. So you create a good culture of not only just being on site, being clean on site, being safe on site, but also something they can take back home.
With hygiene and with... Okay. That's really interesting. That's fascinating. And then I guess I was interested, people in the UK talk a lot about what you might say is traditional architecture, and people hark back to maybe Edwardian buildings or Georgian buildings. You know, there's a real appreciation by some people for a particular style. Is there, I just wonder, I mean, we're talking fairly close to the Kigali Convention Centre, which I guess, certainly the Nairobi International Convention Centre is supposedly based on a traditional Kenyan design. Is that, do you know much? I don't know how much you know about the convention centre here, but I'm really interested in how much kind of historical references, kind of historical identity plays into your perception of Rwandan architecture, whether a building here is, does it matter that it's in Rwanda? You know, what does it mean to build or to design a building in Rwanda?
I think architecture here, and speaking of the convention center, I've had so many stories that relates to our Rwandan hearts, the the king's palace. Yes, because it's a dome, but it goes beyond to just being a dome. What does convention center means to the city? Yeah. It's an icon to the city, which I believe is the biggest win for that project. Every single person pointing finger at it, like, that's convention center. And people from the villages saying they're coming to visit convention center because it's beyond just being a dome or imitating the traditional king's palace to what it's bringing to the city.
Okay. Like
hosting this big African Union summits is a big win for us. And
then
a good exposure to the outside.
Really nice to see new buildings being used in that way to, I guess, define on the international stage a country's ambitions and a country's, I guess you can't ask for more than that from architecture to...
that's what you're looking for.
And then maybe, I know we have to start rounding up shortly, I'm interested in your favourite buildings in Rwanda, or buildings you think people should see, or should, or favourite places that you think, as an architect, you find interesting, or for an audience outside the country, maybe, what would you tell people to look at?
I'll start from the country itself, and I'll be very encouraging to people that they should see the northern part of Rwanda.
Okay.
Because that's the most... I'm from there, and it's so beautiful, the hills, and you can testify or what?
Testify, yeah.
The thousand hills. So at least you can cover...
Rwanda is a country of 1,000 hills.
About 500 hills.
All in the north.
So... I think the landscape itself, I didn't realize how beautiful it is until I get somewhere flat and boring. But so that's one aspect for the country.
So the landscape has an influence on your
landscape,
your thinking. Okay.
And so favorite buildings, I would say, I keep changing my mind, but I'd say the Butaro Hospital is one of my favorite.
Not
because I work for MAS, but because
a very odd message. we'll put a link through in the podcast notes so people can see.
That would be great. So just because I think the story around the hospital, which most of the time I tell people that when I was in school, the first project I had from my mom, who was just, she didn't know anything about architecture, was the Butaro Hospital, when she was asking me about if I knew that hospital. Because when it opened, I was everyone was hearing good things about it, and it was the right project in the right time and place. And so having had that from my mom was quite interesting.
Okay.
I think some of my lecture my lecturers are from there. They are the ones who designed that.
Wow.
So yeah, I think it went beyond just being a hospital, but also the impact it was bringing to the community, and to the people, the Rwandans.
And that's the reward you see in the work, I guess, that you do. And
be recognized and people feel happy about what you do. And
That must be it must be rewarding anyway as an architect, designing any building and seeing it in use. But designing buildings, schools and hospitals for people with very little in terms of money must be a really rewarding job.
Yeah, it's so rewarding. At least, like, even not only after construction, even during construction, tracing foundations and, like, people see a different site plan. It's like they feel so happy and curious to see what's happening next.
Yeah.
And when they find that after construction and it's being used and it's having the right purpose and they feel engaged in from the very beginning to the end, that's what they're looking for, because they feel empowered and feel like they own not good architecture. Everyone deserves good architecture, and so they feel part of the movement.
But I guess the building is being done with them rather than being done for them or for them. But there's a real sense of engagement there.
That's the biggest, building being done by them.
Yeah.
Or for them, by someone else. That's the biggest difference. So the other favorite buildings would be, I would say most of the buildings in Kigali, which are from 60s, 70s.
Yeah.
I would say that they are much... I like them, the fact that they have their attention to details and the workmanship is quite high from I don't know why I don't want to say that today's workmanship
but I mean that's interesting.
But,
I'm interested then in we talk about this a little bit in Nairobi, that I guess a lot of the buildings in Kigali from the 50s and the 60s would have been designed under colonialism, under the Belgians, I guess. You know, was there a kind of big... I was wondering how much of the kind of architecture of the city is from a legacy of that period. Does that feature in your thinking of Rwandan architecture, or... Has the country moved on now past that period?
Yeah, I think the country moved on past that. I won't say that there is so much from that time.
Okay.
It's of course they have the positive and the negative impact, but from churches and to the homes, the colonial homes.
Right. But I guess, Kigali was a very small city at the time of independence.
Yeah.
So by its nature, a lot of the city has been built since independence. And so more of the buildings are, by definition, Rwandan rather than colonial buildings, do you think?
Yeah, I would say that.
Okay.
If... maybe there's some Western influence in the current architecture, like from back in the days, but I wouldn't say that's colonial buildings.
No. Okay. That's great. That's really interesting. I mean, maybe just one last question then about the kind of the makeup of people in your practice in mass design. Some international figures here, some people from overseas. I guess a bit of a crossover with certainly in Kenya, there's working in practices, There seems to be a lot of movement across kind of East African countries in terms of people from Tanzania working in, maybe that's a visa situation. I'm just interested in the kind of international makeup of the practice here. Are you, what proportion of the practice is Rwandan? What proportion are, you probably don't know. You've probably got something to think about.
Yeah, I just counted.
Yeah,
I think they now, I would say that 30%, 35% Rwandan.
Okay.
And maybe 40 African. 40%? I'm not sure, but yeah, it's around those numbers. So, but I'll say to that point that it's also interesting how you can see like the multicultural we have at the Mass office or like in this architectural practice would be it brings more ingredients in the practice, like it's spiced up. our practice and having many people from different backgrounds, I'd say that it's also an opportunity to learn from each other and teach each other different things, and that's what architecture needs these days, and we need to work together and do better buildings.
What a lovely point to end on. Thank you. That's fantastic.
You're welcome.
And we'll come back. I can't believe only 95 architects in the country. It must be,
Yeah, it's still growing. And yeah, the architecture school is...
It's growing, really.
Nine years old. Yeah. So hopefully we will be getting more architects.
Yeah.
Trend here, which is one of the most important thing, being trained in country and face the real issues of this industry, so that we can start solving them from school to the practice. Yeah,
rather than having to go overseas and to learn architecture somewhere else and to apply it back here.
Yeah, it's a privilege to learn outside, but I would say that it's not as...
You learn something else.
You learn something else, and you have to adapt when you get here.
Does it ever appeal to you that you say some of the people from Mass have taught in architecture schools here? Does the idea of teaching the next generation ever appeal to you? Are you interested in teaching, or are you more interested in practice?
I'm very interested in teaching because I would love to do studio.
Okay.
Go back there and see what's happening.
Well, we'll keep an eye out in that look forward to it.
Yeah.
Great. Well, thank you so much for your time. That's really fantastic.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Architecture Masters, the podcast from the London Festival of Architecture. This week, we've been speaking to Teo Owezo, architect at Mass Design Group in Kigali. You can find out more about Teo and his work at architecturemasters.org, from where you can also subscribe to the programme and follow us on Twitter. If you've enjoyed the programme, why not leave a review or a rating with your podcast provider, as this helps others to discover the programme. You can send any comments, questions or suggestions by email to hello@architecturemasters.org. Music from this episode was from Peter Lagono and Raw Music International Kisumu Mixtape via the Free Music Archive and released under a Creative Commons license. I'm Owen Wainhouse. Thank you for listening.